When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi voice app calling, offers 365 and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Richard van den Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 261 for the week starting 26 May 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube live stream on Sundays at 1 p.m. and hit that subscribe button.
On Talk Central this week, it's Trump's way or the Huawei.
Also on the show this week, are your headphones spying on you?
Plus, Facebook moves ahead with plans to launch a cryptocurrency, Telkom to report full year results, and the feature update to Windows 10.
I'm not quite ready for that one yet, Duncan. It's Sunday afternoon. We're live streaming on YouTube, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How are you doing, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Let's dive straight into our quiz before I forget about it. Do you want to do the first question?
Certainly, the first question in this week's quiz. Huawei is developing a smartphone operating system that could replace Android on future devices from the company. What is the operating system called?
And Facebook will reportedly launch its own cryptocurrency, a so-called stablecoin, early next year. What is it called?
The third question. The CEO of Eskom announced this week that he's stepping down, citing health reasons. Who is he?
And Amazon is reportedly working on a device that does what exactly?
And the last question, which South African mobile operator provides the best customer service according to the South African Customer Satisfaction Index?
And I should have said a wearable device that Amazon is working on. And we'll get to the answers to the quiz, as always, at the end of the show. But Richard, what a week it's been since last Sunday when we were actually talking about Huawei and the US and potential implications. And I think we actually spoke about the possibility of Google pulling the plug on Android for Huawei and what that might mean. And I think we kind of concluded that it was, you know that was unlikely to happen, that it was the nuclear option, that Trump wouldn't dare do that, would he? And literally hours after we finished recording last Sunday, that's exactly what happened.
Things escalated pretty quickly there after that podcast. I wonder if anybody was listening.
The war went hot.
Huawei went hot, yeah.
Huawei went hot. But not only Google's Android, but directives to other key suppliers in the US, including chip makers like Intel and Qualcomm and Micron Technology and others, basically cutting off, as one headline put it, Huawei at the kneecaps. At face value, this certainly seems to put Huawei into a very difficult position, right?
Yes, let's not forget they've been given a 90-day extension on this. I'm starting to think that it's been being used as a bargaining chip. Trump is saying, okay, guys, this is the power we hold. Look at the implications. Let's start talking. I hope certainly that is it so that things get back to normal. But I'm starting to sweat a bit for the company and for tech at large because this has got some pretty serious ramifications. And I think a lot of companies are going to start acting and operating very differently after this and however this turns out.
Yeah. It's like a nuclear bomb has gone off in the consumer electronics industry. And it's going to reshape the smartphone industry as we know it for years to come.
Yeah, it is. And I just showed you this before for the show, but I'm going to go back to my Nokia 105 there. I don't need the fancy features. I think that's going to be the only thing that survives after this telcopocalypse, if I can put it like that.
Techpocalypse, yeah. yeah. But it is very serious. I mean, from a consumer perspective, I suppose the major worry is this news about Android. And if you currently own a Huawei device, are you going to get future updates? And that's not clear at all at this stage. It certainly appears, unless something dramatic happens between now and their next phone launch, Which is probably going to be the next major phone launch will be the Mate 30 Pro, which I think is due around August, September timeframe. And if something doesn't happen before then, that device may have to be either cancelled or they're going to have to launch it with a completely new operating system.
Yeah, that, I can't see that they would cancel a launch. They probably launch it with the operating system if their plans, as they say, is advanced as where they are for their own operating system. Mm. I can't see that it is ready yet. Again, you know, for existing users, my biggest fear as a Huawei phone user is I'm probably not going to get that next Android update then. If that comes at the end of the year, we're not going to get that next big update, or at least not officially.
You might have to reroute your phone and do it yourself.
I really don't want those headaches. I specifically thought Android was at a very stable place now. And even though you can't really blame Alphabet and, you know, company Android for this, you know, it's kind of leaving existing Huawei users with a sour taste in their mouth for the Android operating system, or at least with smartphones in general, because this kind of thing, if this can happen relatively easily, I think, you know, any Chinese manufacturer is at risk.
You're right.
Any Chinese product is at risk.
You're quite right. And
Android TV, anything.
Yeah, and this must have a huge impact. I mean, consumers are watching this closely, you can be sure. I mean, would you go and buy a brand new Huawei phone today, knowing what we know today?
No, I wouldn't.
No, neither would I. And so this is...
And even less so if I'm an uneducated... I mean, I'm a techie and I might even say, okay, depending on... I was going to say maybe if the phone is good enough and I can maybe tinker with it, but definitely not for the average consumer, and I wouldn't do it.
It's risky. You're taking a risk if you buy a Huawei phone. And that's a huge problem for Huawei, which has been steadily building itself up as a very serious player in the smartphone market. You know, they've overtaken Apple as the second biggest smartphone manufacturer in the world, and they had designs on becoming number one by the end of this year, overtaking Korea's Samsung Electronics. I can't see that happening now, because there is consumer fear is going to drive people away from this brand unless something changes meaningfully in the coming weeks.
And it is such a pity, because in my opinion, Huawei is the best smartphone manufacturer at the moment. If you look at their devices, it's just a notch above everything else, I think. You can compare a lot of similarities, but in my opinion, this thing is solid, or at least they're flagship phones.
And in my view, you're right. I think they've caught up with Samsung. They're at least on a par with Samsung in terms of Android flagships now.
But then I would go a step further and maybe argue the operating system and the stuff that they put on it. In that department, Huawei would probably reign supreme again. Not a fan with what Samsung does with the operating system and that kind of thing.
What used to be called TouchWiz, I forget what it's
TouchWiz,
called.
TouchWiz.
Used to be called TouchWiz. They've made a lot of improvements to it over the years, but I hear what you're saying. Now, the question, I suppose, is whether Huawei is going to be able to pull the proverbial rabbit out of the hat with this Hongmeng OS that they're developing. Now, executives from Huawei have said that the Hongmeng OS will run all Android applications. And I presume that, you know, even if these new handsets that do run Hongmeng OS don't have the Google apps, Huawei will make it relatively easy for users to sideload them in some way. So when you start up your phone and set it up to start with, there'll be a button saying, would you like to install the Google apps? And as Google has pointed out, the agreement, the contracts for the use of those apps is not between Google and Huawei. It's between Google and the end user. So there may be a technical or legal loophole that Huawei can jump through here now, even if they're precluded from including apps like American apps like or Google apps like Chrome and YouTube and all the others it provides, and potentially, you know, prevented from offering other US apps like Facebook and WhatsApp and that sort of thing. Presumably, there'd be a way for them to make it easy for you to get those apps anyway. Even if it's through some sort of side-loading process during the installation of the phone.
Yeah, just getting those APK files would be easily enough, and you can install it in any case.
Yeah.
But that does change it a bit. I mean, I wasn't aware that they were planning on actually you know, being so compatible with the Android operating system. I mean, obviously it makes sense now that I think about it. But that does make a bit of a difference. And if that works really well, and their operating system can take things maybe a notch further, and they're competing now on a software and a hardware level with full compatibility for existing developers so that they don't have to port apps, maybe they can take that idea even a step further for other platforms.
Yes.
Now we're talking about a company that kind of got forced to break away from the system, and they could be an even bigger disruptor.
Yes.
Which I'm always rooting for the underdog. But
yes.
That could be a very interesting time ahead.
As a number of commentators have pointed out this week, Trump may have inadvertently created a third major mobile operating system competitor.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. And the conspiracists... Sorry, please go for it.
I was just going to say, and that might be a good thing because Android is so dominant and competition is always good.
Well, the conspiracy theorist in me, and I always love talking about this type of thing, but imagine a world where this is really about Apple, and I'm obviously just speculating, a science fiction writer in me, but imagine a world where Apple and the US's plans were to dominate the globe by doing that exact thing that they are accusing Huawei of, which is get their device into the hand of everybody, and then they can control pretty much a lot of things, right? The narrative, what they see. And when they saw competitor Huawei coming up with it, they thought, no, we can't let this happen. But I like to speculate and joke about these things.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of conspiracy theorists, if I can call them that, in the U.S. government about Huawei and China and what they're doing. I think one must remember let's just remember back to the Edward Snowden files and what the National Security Agency was doing and probably still is doing. So maybe the Americans are so conscious and aware and fearful of what China might be doing, because in many respects, the U.S. government's been doing the stuff themselves.
Mm. Look, I mean, if you really want to be talking kind of ethics behind the reasons for a lot of these things, you know, most products, most electronics hardware is made in China. So, you know, it's a bit of a weird problem. If they're accusing Huawei of this type of thing, they should be looking very deeply at every other company that they are dealing with. And the ramifications of that from China's side is also pretty large, right? I mean, if China's in a position to also cut some American companies off, if they really want to make a drastic move like that.
No, if China wanted to retaliate, they could do enormous damage. I mean, just remember the iPhone is made in China. And if China was to say, well, sorry, guys, you can't make your phone here anymore, or you can't sell your iPhone in China, it would do enormous damage to Apple.
The factories are there, right? And you need the factories to make the hardware. You can't just open up a new store somewhere and start selling the iPhones. So I would say, in many ways, China holds the cards for the long term. But it's causing a lot of damage. Trump is causing a lot of damage in the short term. And again, it's the implications for broader industry is huge. Now, the question does remain, is there something we don't know, you know, in terms of US-China politics? I don't know. Anything really goes these days. But is there something that we don't know? And if that's the case, we should be looking. Or then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump starts looking at another company called HIK Vision, which they make basically all the cameras in the world.
They're already doing that. They've already put them on the watch list.
But they're not banned yet. I mean, that's almost a bigger threat for me if that is where the US is going with their thinking, right?
Yeah. And, of course, all those Vuma cams that are popping up all over Joburg are Hikvision cameras. Mm. But it's interesting. I think China's response so far has actually been fairly muted. You know, if they were going to be hot-headed about it, I think they could have done quite a lot of damage already. But they've clearly decided they're going to sit back and take a wait and see attitude, which I thought was interesting, because if they'd wanted to, they could have hit back immediately, and the obvious target to go after is Apple.
Yeah, but I think there's some negotiation tactics happening, which is why the thing seems to be so slow and seemingly playing out. But yeah, I'm waiting for that headline. I mean, what we got a track record now with Sunday afternoon, so maybe we'll hear something in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Later today, yeah, possibly. I'm hoping the only big announcement coming out later today is the appointment of Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet, but I suspect that might be pushed out to tomorrow. But if you look at this as well, and you know, China isn't blameless in this whole thing. Just remember that there are a dozen, possibly more, American companies that are effectively banned from operating in China. Facebook isn't there. Google isn't there. Google refused to comply with the Chinese government censorship demands. There are plenty of other companies. Twitter. China's just banned Wikipedia, of all things. This is not a freedom-loving government. This is not a democracy. So in some respects, while Trump is hitting Huawei and some of the other big tech companies in China, China has for a very long time been very allergic to foreign competition, particularly from American internet companies. I think a lot of that's been driven by China's desire for censorship and for its people not to have a full view of what's going on in the world. But they're not exactly the nicest regime.
And I think this is probably the bigger debate we should be having, you know, post this whole, what I don't know, it'll be something gate call. Somebody will coin something interesting and clever there. But the ethics of China as a country and the companies it has within the country, right? Mm-hmm. If there's issues there, we should be talking about that. And that, again, affects virtually all electronics around the world. I don't think you can have one without the other necessarily. I mean, I'm not saying it's good what they do, but a lot of the tech we have is solely, you know, due to the fact that they've got those type of mechanisms in place, I guess. Mm. Nobody can manufacture stuff cheaper, which has a benefit in African economies where we can't always afford expensive electronics, so we get cheaper cell phones or smartphones. But yeah, we should be having that larger conversation around really if we are going to be condoning things, condoning how they treat their people and the censorship there. And then, you know, do we then support their products? Mm-hmm. It's a difficult conversation to have because it does impact every part of our lives and people aren't comfortable with that, to give up their prized electronics. You're going to have to do that if this thing is going to be turning into a bigger game.
Yeah, I think this is going to be, certainly in the ICT industry, this is going to be the big global story of the next 3 to 5 years. It certainly is going to be. Maybe not the biggest story overall in the next 5 years, but it's certainly going to have a transformative impact on the IT industry. And you know, everyone's focusing on, of course, on the Huawei handsets, but it's not just that. It's the construction of new 5G telecommunications networks, where Huawei is an early leader. They've invested a huge amount of money in R&D over the last 5, 6, 7 years, getting ready to be a significant player in 5G. And they are without these latest developments, they were poised to become the leading global supplier of 5G telecommunications equipment. And of course, Huawei is branching increasingly into traditional IT. You know, they've got a huge enterprise division. They've launched cloud computing or cloud data centers around the world, including here in South Africa. They're competing head on with companies like Dell and EMC and IBM and Cisco, of course. Historically, they've competed with Cisco, but they're building a huge enterprise ICT business. They don't only have ambitions in consumer electronics and in building telecommunications networks. They want to be a full service tech giant that provides you with everything and competes with some of the leading players, which tend mostly to be big listed American technology companies. And there's no doubt the Americans and Trump and U.S. politicians see the rise of this company, and it's been a spectacular rise over the last 5 years, as a threat to their high tech industry, which really has led American growth over the last 5 years. It's actually been leading American growth for much longer than that, but the performance of American tech companies has been spectacular since. The Great Recession back at the end of 2009, beginning of 2010. And so Huawei is a threat to them. It's geopolitics, though, and whether Trump is going to emerge as, or whether he'll be shown to be right in his decisions 5 years from now, we'll only know then. But whether this also will halt the rise of China's high-tech ambitions is open to question. I personally don't think it will. I think it may even make China stronger in the long term because they now realize that they don't necessarily, they can't be guaranteed access to American technology in the future, so they're going to do everything they can to build their own silicon in China, and they are going to build their own operating systems because they can't be guaranteed, even if this current storm blows over, that in future it won't happen again, and Google and or Microsoft and or other companies are told by the US government, sorry, you can't provide the software. So I think it actually may strengthen China in the long term and make them more innovative and self-reliant.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you suppress the oppressor, right, they're just going to hit back harder because they don't think about this in logical terms. They would just want to dominate even harder because they've been...
I think they're thinking in extremely logical terms. They're realizing that there's a threat to their to the high-tech industry's existence there, not being able to...
No, sure. Okay, yeah. I used the wrong word there. No, you're right. Okay. But they would certainly hit back much harder. But the thing for China that we also need to remember is they've really got their own economy that they can probably happily sustain them. I mean, they've got a massive population there, right? Mm. So if they just remove all American-based branding and just have their own branded devices in there running their own operating system, they'll probably be very self-sufficient. The world will lose out, or America will lose out, because they won't have access to that fancy tech that builds these phones, apart from a few silicon fabs scattered around the world.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. But I think China and the Huawei brands are going to be much stronger in the long run because of this. Mm-hmm. The question is, how will consumers like us, kind of stuck in the middle, literally in the middle between these two factions, how is it going to affect us and our tech usage? How is it going to affect our current phones? You know, we love Android, we love Google services. I mean, we can't survive without them. Will we be forced to make a choice to switch brands now, or will they actually deliver a really cool operating system? It's going to blow us out of the water. Look what Android did for the smartphone industry.
Yeah.
What if we see a fifth or sixth revolution of that, and all of a sudden we have a truly open platform that anybody can plug into? Again, they've got a very strong user base to begin with. I don't even know what the population numbers is, but
it's about 1.4 billion, I think.
Wow,
that's a big market.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, you've got enough to sustain it. But again, we have to come back to the question. You know, if we're going to be talking ethics and anything around this, we really need to talk about, do we need to support China and all of these things, you know? But South Africa, we're very close to them. So Africa is also very close to China. So
through BRICS, the BRICS setup. And there was a very interesting article on Bloomberg this morning, which we republished on Tech Central, well worth a read, basically saying, and it's not just us consumers who are going to have to make decisions about whether or not to begin to buy Chinese technology, but it's actually a political decision that every country around the world is going to have to make, much like in the Cold War back in the 1980s, where countries had to decide whether they were aligned to Russia or whether they were aligned to the West. In many respects, this article argues, countries are going to have to choose whether they're aligned to Team America or to Team China. Whatever decision they make can have a big long-term impact, because these countries are spending money. And, you know, if you align with the U.S., the U.S. is going to probably be much more amenable to investing in your country. And the same, I would imagine, with China. So in some respects, we're kind of back to that Cold War situation. It's not Russia this time, it's China versus America.
Do we really have to choose? I mean, we had such a good time. The internet was, we just got fiber. And now we have to choose, like, you know, where we're going to want to connect to. It's not ideal.
Yeah. Anything else we need to talk about on the Huawei subject? I suppose a lot of it is information we're going to find out in the coming weeks. Huawei is going to release more information about its new operating system. We'll get some more detail on which devices it's going to come to. What will be interesting is whether when they eventually do release the Hengmong OS, whether people with existing Huawei devices like the Mate 20 Pro, for example, or the P30 Pro, which was released recently, will be able to have the option of installing that instead of Android.
Yeah, would you?
I don't know.
And look, I mean, if it comes down to the next update, if let's say I can't get the new Android update and the new operating system is equally and hopefully more impressive, then yeah, I will try it. I mean, the curious person in me, the journalist in me, would also definitely install it and see what it's about.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just hoping we're getting this beautiful unicorn that can do some amazing things. Yeah. And you know, if we hedge our bets on a company to do something impressive, it could be them if they're pushed into a corner. But I guess the question is, were they ready? Did it fall in line with their time frame? Maybe it's a year out, or maybe it's ready. Maybe it has been ready for a year.
They've been working on it for years. They've been working on it for years.
I'm talking about like ready, like shipping ready to have it ready out into the market in this scale to take over the Android operating system. Probably. I mean, you know, they would plan for it, right? Like you say, they are logical.
They've described it as Plan B. That's their Plan B, and they've been working on it for years. So maybe the Mate 30 Pro in September, when it ships, or October, will be running Heng Mong.
And look, we know it's going to be easy to flip the switch. I mean, you will be able to just have that little button in the beginning to say which operating system you want to use. Old dated Android or the brand new shiny one?
I'll give it a try. I wonder if they'll make it available for non-Huawei handsets. If they're smart, I think they will.
Yeah, it'll certainly. I mean, that hasn't really been the only thing that's been missing from this whole Android dream we've been promised, right? Buying an essentially a blank phone or a phone that you can do anything on or install a choice of operating systems on or something.
Yeah.
We know why that doesn't work these days, but even it's hard to even get a vanilla flavored Android device.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to see at least an experimental version in the market, or at least an era of operating systems. I mean, imagine if you have home builders who start developing, you know, I mean, there are a lot out there, but really good, high quality, theme-based potentially. You go into a market and just buy whichever operating system you want to do either a gaming-focused operating system or calling, whatever. I mean, the sky's the limit, right?
Yeah.
It could be very interesting the way it plays out.
I had a very interesting chat with the CEO of a company called Yola, spelled J-O-L-L-A this week. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his almost unpronounceable Finnish name, but the discussion is on YouTube and on Tech Central if you want to have a look at it. Now, they developed something called the Sailfish OS, which was an attempt to provide to develop a competitor to Android, and it came out of the old Migo OS. I don't know if you remember the Migo OS, Richard. It was a collaboration between Nokia and Intel, and they were developing this around the time the original iPhone came out. It wasn't successful. That partnership broke up. But the Sailfish OS development has continued, and it's got a huge community of developers in China. It unlike some of the other attempts to take on Android, like Firefox OS and Ubuntu Touch from our own Mark Shuttleworth, they moved into the more of the business market and providing the operating system to business and public sector clients. But they're seeing potentially a big opportunity to sell Sailfish to Chinese operators. So that's another angle, another potential operating system. It's well worth going to have a listen to that podcast. They believe that again, as we said at the beginning of this podcast, that this is really a transformative event for the mobile industry and is really going to reshape things. But it'll be interesting to see if Sailfish OS starts to pop up on some of these Chinese smartphones.
Yeah, look, we're there now, right? I mean, the line has been drawn, and we're going to have to see what innovation is going to come from it. Because at any big milestone in our technology history, there's been something that happened that spurred on a need, or that was something that was born out of, you know, some chaotic event.
Yeah.
So we're living in those times, guys.
Yeah.
What were you doing when the US banned Huawei? I mean, that will we have those conversations?
Rishal Jagath in the chat room makes a good point. He says Huawei also manufactures a lot of Windows-based laptops. And the Huawei hasn't historically been a big player in the laptop market, but they've been bringing out some very, very sexy devices lately. The Huawei, I think it's called the Huawei Mate X Pro, MateBook Pro X or something like that. MateBook X Pro, I think it's called. And it's a lovely looking machine. But it raises a good point as well. If Google's pulling the plug on Android, although that ban has been temporarily lifted until August, I think it is. Is Microsoft next? Is Microsoft going to say to Huawei, sorry, you can't have Windows for our laptops? Microsoft hasn't said anything, but it's the logical conclusion to draw. If Google's not going to supply Android, surely Microsoft's not going to supply Windows.
But I think that's kind of also more of a gray area, right? Because you can just sell it as a blank unit and then buy your operating system separately, or ship the blankness to the country where it's gets sold, and then buy the matched operating system from another vendor. I mean, that's the easiest solution, or just ship it with Linux or something.
Yeah.
But their hardware is really good. And, you know, the more we talk about this and the more I think about this, the simplest version of this really does seem to be that the US is trying to prevent China from taking over, you know, their companies, because they want domination, obviously. I mean, it's a very simple movie plot, right?
They see China as a threat to their high-tech industry. I think that's what's at the heart of this. And I think everything else is a bit of a sideshow. Now, they've obviously expressed a lot of concern about security, national security, and having Huawei build the next generation 5G infrastructure. And maybe there's some arguments to be made there that, you know, Huawei is perhaps in some way controlled by the Chinese government, and could they be forced to put backdoors in their telecommunications equipment? I still find that argument a little bit hard to digest, though, because if Huawei was to do that and any of those backdoors were ever found in their handsets or in their telecommunications gear, it would be devastating for them. I don't think they can do it. I don't think they'd get away with it.
Yeah, well, that would be a immediate shutdown. Look, on the flip side of the – okay, we haven't seen anything reverse engineered, because I'm sure somebody would have started looking. But on the other side, you know, the strategy, also a simple one in that regard, is first you dominate the market with the legitimate product, and then you start introducing the buggy stuff, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, I'm just saying, like, in a world where that – if that really was the case. But again, I don't know. You know, we're living in a world where everything gets scrutinized. I mean, secrets aren't really secret anymore. And the hardware is out there, and the software is out there. Yep. I mean, people find what emojis are coming next, or what features are coming next within the next smartphones by looking at lines of code and what they refer to. You have to have those traces, I think. And if you know what you're looking for, I guess.
Someone will find
those things. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have spent a lot of time talking about China and the US and geopolitics and Huawei. We should probably move on to the other stories that we've got on our list this week, because they're also very, very interesting and important stories. And the first of those is that Facebook is planning to launch its own cryptocurrency. This isn't new, but we now have a sort of timeline on this, and they're talking about early 2020, so early next year, less than a year from now probably, to launch something called Global Coin. Certainly no pretensions there. They planning to launch it as what's called a stable coin. That means a cryptocurrency that's pegged to an existing fiat currency, like the US dollar or the South African rand or the British pound. I think they're probably going to do that because of the volatility in cryptocurrencies, and they'd want some stability for the people who are going to use this. But the idea is that, as I understand it, Facebook users are going to be able to use GlobalCoin to send money between each other. It's an interesting idea, and Facebook, which has I think one point, I forget how many active users they have. Is it over 2 billion now? I think it is over 2 billion.
Half the world, yes.
Basically, at least a third of the world is running Facebook. So that makes them instantly a potentially very powerful player in fintech and in the monetary system. Now, they've had discussions already with central bankers, including The Central Bank of the UK, they've spoken, I believe, to the Federal Reserve Bank in the US and other regulators around the world, other central banks around the world. So they're clearly looking at this quite seriously, even though they say they've only got a small team working on it at the moment. But just given the size of Facebook and its user base, it has the potential to be hugely transformatory, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of coming back to the previous conversation. I won't mention any of those words, but powerful companies like Facebook, it's really something to watch.
Yeah.
Every big, powerful tech company these days is something we really need to be looking very closely at. And if we look at all the companies that's kind of in the news these days, Facebook and the social media companies are the bigger demons in these stories. Mm. None of the tech hardware companies has really caused as many of these issues or leaks of data. It shows you where and in which countries these problems lie. Now, with Facebook having all of this dominance, I think their play could be a very successful one, because now immediately you're tapping into, you know, every Facebook user, every, you know, every user, and they probably make it easy to use as well. So now you can back a lot of, you can back an API on this, and now you're opening up a lot of possibilities for people to provide commerce functionality globally. It's going to be interesting to see how SaaS takes this. And
it's quite interesting because, you know, we haven't seen cryptocurrencies being used in a widespread way for daily commerce. If Facebook introduces a cryptocurrency that has the potential to be used by billions of people, and even if it's only used by tens of millions of people, it could legitimize the idea of cryptocurrencies as a daily transactional mechanism. It could at the end of the day be hugely important for the entire cryptocurrency market, because in many ways it will legitimize it and perhaps make people more comfortable about using tokens like Bitcoin.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at how well they've really implemented, although it's still quite difficult to use, but like their ad system, now any small business can really reach out to anybody else. Mm. The way that and Google is also to a large degree, but the way that Facebook has done it for their audiences, and now Instagram too, it's kind of revolutionized the way small businesses spend money on social media. I mean, you can spend 50 Rand worth of ads. It's like Uber, right?
Yeah.
Cheaper, better, faster. Now, again, it'll be interesting to see how they implement, because small businesses is the core of a lot of, you know, Facebook's churn. Mm. But again, sending money, using it, if I want to buy something from somebody, their marketplace is already pretty big. Tapping something, a payment system like this into it, they would own, you know, they would own the back end. It's a very profitable place to be.
Yeah, we'll hopefully get some more details about that in the coming months. I must say, I think there's going to be a lot of regulatory pushback against Facebook over this. But I'm actually quite excited about it because of what it means for shaking up the financial system.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we should look at them cautiously, because Facebook is in my bad books at the moment. They
why is that?
Well, for a while now. No, it's just the way that they are treating data, and the way that the company is. I mean, we've looking at all the headlines from the last few years. I mean, they're an amazing company, but with so much power comes a lot of responsibility, right? And I'm butchering that quote completely. But they were great. Mm-hmm. What was that from the Marvel movies?
I've never seen the Marvel movies.
With great power comes great responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. That's it. Very few of these big companies are showing it. But it's interesting to see how the tech is really maturing. I've really known for a while. I've always thought that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is still very much in its infancy.
Yeah.
We haven't seen the last of it yet by any stretch. We just don't understand it. We don't know how to implement it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it's been interesting to watch Bitcoin's rise. I've got the price here on my Elgato Stream Deck on my desk here, 7919.
I'm so jealous. Is that thing performing very nicely, I believe?
It's a beautiful piece of hardware. It's the Elgato Stream Deck, for anyone who doesn't know. It's actually aimed at gamers, but it's also very good for doing live streaming. I still need to configure it fully. And we're going to be using Wirecast for streaming in future. I know we said in the last episode we'd be using OBS Studio, But I've settled on Wirecast, and Wirecast plays very nicely with the Elgato Stream Deck. So just to describe it, it's a series of how many buttons? 15 buttons with little LCD screens, which are completely customizable. So I can hit a button and a picture will pop up on the live stream, for example, or a video, or just about anything. But I've configured it at the moment with a little clock and a little button that tells me the live Bitcoin price. It's just fallen by a dollar. I've also got the USD ZAR exchange rate set up on it. But
can you customize one of those buttons to buy and sell? As you see, you just go probably. buy and sell.
Yeah, I think you could pretty much customize this thing to do anything. It's pretty remarkable piece of gear. Elgato Stream Deck, very impressed with it. But need to learn a lot more about it. A lot of the sort of if this then that functionality that you can build into it. But it's pretty cool. Right. What else do we need to talk about? Oh, you were mentioning, Rechat, that it tends to be these internet companies that leak data. But interesting story that has emerged in the last week about Bose, the maker of wireless headphones, very good wireless headphones. In fact, I'm wearing a pair of their...
You're a big fan, yeah.
I'm wearing a pair of their wired ones at the moment, the Bose QC25s. But this story relates specifically to Bose's wireless Bluetooth headphones. There was a story that appeared this week saying that that they are being sued in a U.S. court because their app, which they encourage you to download and install on your phone to improve the quality of the audio on your Bose headphones, has allegedly been sending data about everything you listen to back to Bose, and worst of all, they've then been on-selling that data without your permission to third parties. So Bose has denied it. They've issued a statement saying, "We understand the nature of class action lawsuits and will fight the inflammatory, misleading allegations made against us through the legal system," Bose said in a statement on its website. "For now, we want to talk directly to you. Nothing is more important to us than your trust. We work tirelessly to earn and keep it, and we have for over 50 years. That's never changed and never will." It's going to be an interesting class action lawsuit. And, of course, it comes just days after the news emerged that Apple has been accused, also, I think, in a class action lawsuit, of selling customers' iTunes purchase data to a third party. Three iTunes customers from Rhode Island and Michigan sued Apple on Friday in a federal court in San Francisco, seeking to represent hundreds of thousands of residents of their home states who allegedly had their personal listening information disclosed without their consent. I think what's interesting about that one, Rechad, is that Apple, of course, was not so long ago trumpeting it in huge billboards outside of CES that what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. Perhaps not.
Well, yeah, unless we say so, you know, that's how we still have the last say in that.
Yeah.
But again, you know, the problems are huge within these companies. And now we have, you know, the other side of the coin. I mean, it's really just a battle of wills and countries, and because everybody's out to get your data, everybody's out to get the most amount of money, to extract the most amount of money from every human being. And that's really the bottom line of big corporates. Unfortunately, we love our tech, but we need to be more conscious consumers, I think. And, you know, what we don't know, obviously, it's difficult for us to judge, but, you know, post all of these events, and we should already be using Facebook more wisely and using Instagram and social media more wisely than what we did 10 years ago. We don't have much power if we don't stand up. Class action lawsuits, I guess.
Yeah. So Windows 10 has a major update. The Windows 10 May 2019 update. Microsoft really needs to come up with better names for its operating system updates. I've installed it on my laptop. I haven't really had a chance to play with it yet. I've been trying to get it installed on various other Windows machines in my office, but to no avail. The update just won't present itself. And apparently this is part of Microsoft's, after the issues that happened after the October 2018 update, they are apparently pushing it out much more slowly this time to avoid a repeat of that disaster where user data data was deleted off people's hard drives. So it's pushing out slowly. So I suppose laptops might get it first because they've got a known set of hardware. And then if you've built your own PC with different components, then Microsoft is probably going to push it out to you later because it needs to gather more information on whether the updates on those rigs, if I can call them that, are working 100%. So they're being very cautious. But it looks like a fairly exciting update. I've obviously read about it and played around with it briefly on my laptop. But there's some interesting improvements that have been released, some interesting new features. You wanted to tell us about a few of them, Rehat.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to start off with my favorite one, and I think this is something that should have been coming a long time ago. It's the Windows Sandbox that allows you to now run applications kind of outside of your live environment, your running machine environment. The geeky me is very happy with this because now it'll allow me to be more curious with those files that I download, Duncan. I might go back onto the dark
web
and just download EXEs. Yeah, and see what they do. You know, it's like incognito mode for your web browser. But we know incognito mode doesn't really work, guys. Let's just be honest about that. But yeah, Windows Sandbox is a very cool one. There's another nice feature, is a new light theme. We've known about the introduction of dark theme. A lot of devices and apps now have dark themes. But their light theme is taking things a step in the other direction, so going a step back from the default theme. It's kind of got a translucent look and a feel to it, which looks pretty cool. Another feature that I thought was really nice from a long-standing Windows user point of view, especially from back in the day when you couldn't uninstall any of those default apps and games that Windows ships with your machine. Now they've introduced a system where a lot of the default applications like your music calendar, mail, movies, TV, calculator, and those kind of things can be uninstalled from the operating system, which is pretty cool. And then the new cleaner start menu. So they've really updated the start menu. One of my biggest irks with installing Windows these days, and I seem to do it a lot more often than I should, is all the bloatware that comes with it. And I've never understood why they don't allow you to give you an option to clean install. Again, this is something we need to be addressing, but relatively easy to uninstall, and they've kind of just worked on that to allow you to better manage your start menu. And it also looks a bit better at startup. It doesn't look like a New York City billboard anymore.
Do you use the start menu?
Not often, but I do. I would say a few times a week, a handful of times a week, I actually go in there. I've got a few pinned stuff that's overflowed from my taskbar.
Yeah.
So some of the rare apps I use, lesser apps I use, I wouldn't go in there and get them.
I think Windows 8 taught me not to use it because Windows 8 had that horrible full screen display that came up. It was really terrible. And ever since I used Windows 8 right up until Windows 10 came out, and it kind of trained me not to use the start menu anymore. So I just put everything on the task tray or the task bar at the bottom of the screen. The apps I use regularly, and if I need to open an app, it's not in my task tray. I hit the search icon rather than hitting the Windows button, and I just type the name of the app, hit enter, and I never actually go into the start menu. I think the only time I ever do it is to shut the computer down or restart it. Otherwise, I never go in there.
Yeah, I just clicked on mine again. There's a lot of stuff I actually still need to remove. I use 80% of it I don't use. The others, I can probably be a bit more productive if I use your mechanism or your method. But it's old habits. Remember when the start menu was first introduced in 95, Duncan?
It's earlier than that, isn't it? It was 95.
It was 95.
What did Windows 3.1 use? I forget. So long ago now.
Wasn't that like a really odd-shaped menu? It looked like a Windows... It was like Windows only with the file menu drop-down
system.
Yes,
you're right.
Everything was running within that weird GUI.
Yeah. Did you use Windows 3.1 back in the day?
And it was just before my time. I had some experiences with it, but I didn't really use it at home, so to speak. My Windows at home was 95.
Yeah. I think the first version of Windows I used was Windows 3.0. Which was a really horrible piece of software. 3.1.
Yeah, I went DOS to Windows 95, hardcore.
Straight to 95, yeah. And then 98, and then did you ever use Windows Millennium Edition?
Installed and loved and hate most of them. But yeah, I did most. The one that I used for the longest period of time that I remember was Windows 2000. That was
Very stable
back in the day.
That was very stable. Yeah, I also ran Windows 2000 for a while. I ran Windows Millennium Edition for about 6 months. I don't know how I actually managed to survive. The thing would give us a blue screen of death every 10 minutes. It was. I think that was
A disk gear somewhere. It's not within arm's reach, but I've got a few disks that I found the other day.
Millennium Edition.
I'm very proud to have owned them. Yeah. The upgrade.
Yeah, I had it as well.
98 second edition, upgrade editions.
Mm. I've still got the Windows 3.1 installation floppy disks lying around somewhere.
Ooh, those are relics.
Yeah.
Another nice thing about the Windows update that you can now, so you know when you install it, and especially if people like me install Windows a lot, when you don't want to log into an account, you can now actually log in with just using a cell phone number, and it'll send you a code, and you can just log in. And
okay.
Have an account set up. Well, it'll have that account set up for you with your cell phone number, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And there's also some mixed reality improvements. We know that they've got a massive play with the HoloLens. So I think we're going to be starting a lot more software operating system integration as these handsets kind of get into consumers' hands.
Yeah.
Because we can all you can see a world where we're going to have one of these on our, put them on in the morning when you start working and have an entire field of view in front of you with unlimited options. I think I'm really looking forward to that space and time. Unfortunately, I was looking forward to the Huawei heads-up display, but we're not going to get that now, are we?
Yeah, I look forward to playing around with Windows 10 update. It's there's some nice features in there. I'll try the light mode, but I'm a big fan of dark mode. My Windows is dark everywhere. My Microsoft Office is dark. Chrome is dark. Every app that allow me to turn to dark mode, I do so because I find it's a lot less stressful on my eyes.
No, I love it. And it looks, I mean, after, 30 years now almost of beige and light, ugly colored windows, it's just rebelling against it. Mm. But it looks good. It really looks good. I mean, Google, your Google landing or your homepage in dark mode is also beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And the next version of Android is going to have a dark mode as well. Not that it's coming to Huawei devices.
Well, our devices already have a dark mode. Have you set it up yet? No, Huawei's already introduced it, guys.
Yeah. I must have a
look. Yeah, just go into the battery settings and there's a switch that goes dark mode.
I must go and have a look at that.
Been using it for months, Duncan.
Hey, I'm behind the times here. Behind the times. The last item of news just
put you onto a tech news website to read daily. We'll keep you updated.
Yeah. I wonder which one I could look at. The last item of news this week, and it's going to be the big story of tomorrow, is Telkom's full year results to the year ended 31 March 2019. Interesting that their share price has had a very strong run up over the last couple of months, and I think on Friday it closed up about 6%. It must be close to its highest level since it sold out its stake, its 50% stake in Vodacom. So the market's obviously expecting good things from these numbers tomorrow. I think the numbers will show their mobile business has continued to grow strongly on the back of those aggressively priced freemi plans. I think the market will be watching how the fixed line business has done, and also, of course, BCX, which is the enterprise IT services company that they own, which has been underperforming for a number of years now. But certainly the markets are positive on Telkom. The share price is up strongly year on year, and we'll be watching those numbers. It should be out, I think, around 7 or 8 tomorrow morning on the JSE's Stock Exchange News Service, and we'll have full rolling coverage on Tech Central tomorrow, including a live interview right here on YouTube on this channel with the group CEO, Sipho Maseko, and that'll be happening sometime between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, just a quick 20-minute interview. But we'll be bringing that to you live here on our YouTube channel. So if you're not already subscribed to our channel, you're watching us on YouTube now, hit that subscribe button and hit the bell as well, and you'll be alerted whenever we go live here on Tech Central. It'll pop up on your browser and desktop if you allow YouTube to show you notifications, or you'll get a notification or an email on your phone to let you know that we have gone live. So if you're keen to hear that interview tomorrow with the CEO of Telkom, hit that subscribe button. And Rechad, that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. I've picked our winner this week as OpenView, the company that offers, the sister company to ETV, that offers free satellite television into South Africans' homes. And they've been doing very well. They're loss-making, but their losses have been reduced over the last year. But the number of activations they've got on the OpenView decoders has risen by about 400,000 in the past 12 months and is now sitting at about 1.5 million people, million households. So if you, I don't know what the average household size in South Africa, but let's say it's about 4 or 5, then you're talking big numbers. You're talking very big numbers. And so they've done very well indeed. And it again raises the question, you know, people, there is a demand for these sort of low cost or free terrestrial television services. And do we really need terrestrial when these sort of services can be provided, as OpenView has proved, through satellite? And it does make me wonder once again, whether we're on a hiding to nothing by at this late stage still going for DTT or digital terrestrial television, when perhaps we should just be looking at moving everything out of satellite and freeing up the spectrum for all of the spectrum for broadband. Our loser this week is Huawei, for obvious reasons. I'm not even going to go back there since we've spoken about it exhaustively this week. But they're our loser this week. They may end up being our loser of the year, depending on how this whole story unfolds. But we'll keep a close tab on that. Richard, what's your pick of the week?
So I've been flouting that box around all show. But my pick is this very rare, because they are very difficult to find.
Oh, are they?
The Nokia 105. Yeah, I don't know why. They're probably going out of production. They're probably going to be replaced. There's so many of these cheap handsets now. But I love this one for two reasons. And I somehow find I give them out like business cards these days, because people like them so much. You know, if I show them to somebody, they all want it. But for like $250 or so, it's just a very nice second backup phone. Now, I do some work stuff that I require a feature phone. But now I use it. I've got a second SIM in there, and I just carry it around as a second device for whatever nefarious reasons I need. And I'm just joking. I just have it as a second device.
It's your burner phone.
As in case I should ever require to phone, and I, whatever, something, if my phone gets stolen, heaven forbid, or, you know, I would have a second device on me, you know, unlike a smartphone. This thing is on standby for 15 days, I think. So it's just one of those phones. And it's Nokia. I mean, it's a really beautiful, it's kind of a little legendary little device.
Yeah,
they
know how to do design.
It.
Yeah.
I mean, it's simple, it's beautiful, it's got a torch. I mean, again, it stays in my bag for no other reason as a backup device that I know will be reliable when I need it. Mm-hmm. For $250, they're beautiful. They came in black and white. I had a black and blue. I had some black ones, but they are very difficult to get hold of now. But so if you can get them, grab them. I would just get one or two and keep them in a box somewhere. They also make a great gift for people that don't have phones. I do some work with guys that kind of do some charity work. And for people that don't have basic communication devices, this is a beautiful thing to give to somebody. Mm. You'd be surprised. Everybody's got a feature phone, but they don't last long in most people's hands just because of how rough people are with them.
Yeah.
If they're your main device. But this thing is pretty hardy. I would recommend it.
And the battery life is amazing.
Yeah, the battery life. I mean, I've charged it once. I charged one of them once. It was in my bag for longer than a month, I think, the second one. Wow. I had. And when I switched it on, it was off. But no, you won't have a problem with battery life if it's on.
Yeah.
It's pretty reliable. And I found the reception is pretty good too. I went to a farm in the Eastern Cape when I went there, and it actually had better reception than one of the smartphones in the house, which was pretty interesting.
Interesting.
So not my smartphone, obviously, but one of the other cheaper smartphone devices that just didn't work as well. And this thing picked up in a valley perfectly.
The most important question I need to ask you about this phone, though, Richard, is does it run Snake?
You know, I actually have never checked, Duncan.
No.
That is ridiculous. It probably has Snake, but no, it doesn't have Snake.
It doesn't have Snake.
The buttons probably doesn't work. I'll switch it on now, and I'll let you know.
Oh, you hear that, is that the classic Nokia tune?
So can you see this menu?
Yeah, give us a demo.
So there you can see the very
basic
operating system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, it's a color screen. It's not.
That's amazing.
Bad,
for R250. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's got Tetris on. It's got Snake. It's got Snake.
It's got Snake.
There we go.
There we go. Sold.
There we go.
I'll take 10.
No, this is this year's hottest Christmas gift.
Right, fire up, Snake.
Give your kids. Can I play it in reverse?
Whoa. Yeah. If I give you instructions while you're showing me the screen, then we can see if we can play the game together over the internet.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I got that. I can't even see it there.
The problem is as soon as I talk, I can't see your visual anymore. This is going to be a disaster. Okay. Snake over you just doesn't really work. But yeah, it comes with Snake. That's cool.
I didn't die in my defense. But yeah, look at that. Battery halfway, and I haven't used this thing for 2 weeks now.
Very impressive. My pick this week is an app called Air Visual. I came across it. Someone posted it on Twitter this week, I think. And it's an app that monitors the air quality of cities around the world. Their purpose seems to be to sell these devices that allow you to monitor air quality. You can buy them through the app. I think it's about $300. But you can also add cities near you. Mine is picking up a device in the Randburg suburb of Robindale, which is probably, I don't know, about 5 kilometers or 6 kilometers from my present location. But it tells you what the air quality is and also what the forecast air quality is. So really, really interesting. I certainly won't be buying one of these devices, not at about $200 or $300. But people are buying them and they're installing them around the world. And it gives you an idea of what your air quality is like relative to other cities. So Robindale right now, which, as I said, is about 5 or 6 kilometers from my present location, the air quality is moderate, 61, so not great, not poor either.
So that's a private user who bought one, has it installed, and you can see that data.
That's correct, yes.
I wonder if he knows that you're reading his data.
No, I think so. I think if you buy one of these devices,
But yeah, yeah. I'm sure you would.
Does he know I'm also reading?
Makes sense.
Does he also know I'm reading all his email? No. But it's quite cool. Let me just show it at the camera. Let me just try and get this into view. But there you can see Beijing is the second one down. So the air quality in Beijing right now is substantially better than it is in Johannesburg, which is rather remarkable. But you can add any city you want and compare it, and also get a forecast. Now, rather worryingly, in Robindale, the forecast for Monday is for severe air quality. The range of 201 to 300. I'm not sure what those numbers represent. Maybe the number of particulates in a particular space of air. But it's an interesting app anyway. There don't seem to be too many people in Johannesburg or South Africa, for that matter, with these devices, but I'm sure that'll grow. But it's an interesting app. Air Visual, one word. You'll find it in the Play Store, and I presume it's on iOS devices as well. And that record, I think, is our show. We just need to do our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Huawei is developing a smartphone operating system that could replace Android on future devices from the company. What is the OS called? And that is Hongmeng.
Facebook will reportedly launch its own cryptocurrency, a so-called stablecoin, early next year. What is it called? And the answer is Globalcoin.
And the CEO of Eskom announced this week that he is stepping down, citing health reasons. Who is he? And that's Pagamani Hadebe.
And the fourth question, Amazon is reportedly working on a wearable device that does what? And the answer is read human emotions. Finally, all those boyfriends can read their girlfriends' inner emotions.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about a device that does that. Can warn you.
Isn't that what your face and your eyes are for? I mean, yeah. Do you read people's... Well, this is the problem with the digital era.
Yeah, we know men are very poor at picking up cues from our wives and women, and maybe this will help. Watch beeps, have a look. Your wife is mad. Probably pop up things. Probably best that you run now. And the last question in this week's quiz, which South African mobile operator provides the best customer service according to the South African Customer Satisfaction Index? Now, they ranked three companies. They didn't include Telkom or Rain. But of the companies that they ranked, which were MTN, Vodacom, and Cell C, they found that Vodacom was provided the best customer service, which is interesting. I would have guessed Cell C personally, but that's the finding of their research.
I think we need to redefine what good customer service is first, and then reevaluate these companies, because I think the benchmarks are a bit out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, most of these companies have flaws in terms of that type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's our show. Thanks for watching. If you joined us live on YouTube today, podcast will be available after the fact on YouTube. Of course, will also be available through our normal audio channels, so on iono.fm or on your favorite audio podcatcher, like Spotify, like Pocket Casts. Where else are we available, Rehat? I forget them. Apple, iTunes, so many of them these days. TuneIn Radio, Spotify.
I didn't know it's on TuneIn Radio. That's pretty cool. I was not aware of that.
We're on TuneIn, indeed. Just search Tech Central, one word, in any of your favorite podcatchers, and the shows will come up. And, of course, we do the Cars and Gadgets podcast. The Tech Central podcast, which is where you'll be hearing the interview with the Telkom Group CEO tomorrow. And, of course, we have some interesting interviews lined up during the course of the week and the following week, including an interview with Valor.com founder Fazam Essani, who's going to be talking to us about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency trading. So that's going to be very interesting. That's happening, I think, on the 4th of June. But hit that subscribe button on YouTube if you don't want to miss any of our podcasts. And don't forget to hit the bell button as well, and you'll be notified of the next time we go live. From Rehan and myself, thanks for joining us. Until next time, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.